I've hit record. We're live. Now we're going to do our fake sound test. Dad, okay. Say something silly.
Something silly.
Okay. Uncle Daryl, say something even sillier.
Something even sillier.
All right. And Joe, insult my penis.
Jason, your penis is the hugest thing that I've ever tasted.
Perfect. Go ahead, Joe. It's all you.
Welcome, one and all, likely just one, to Just Be Uncles. It's a Dad's Giving podcast where our fathers give the show listenable content, and we give them thanks for it. I am one of your unfortunate hosts, Joseph Neil Darrelson Jackson Johnnyson III. With me, as always, is the actual host, my cousin.
Hey.
The Reverend Dr. Jason Mark Danielson Jackson Johnnyson VII, Esquire.
Awesome.
This is Just Because.
I don't know if you're trying to do the timing there, Joe, but yeah. Hey, Dad and Daryl, how are you?
I'm doing good.
I'm doing great.
Awesome. So we've been working, just to let the audience know, the audience person, that we've been working for literally 2 hours to get this going, and now we have nothing to say because we've said it all. So good night, gentlemen. It was fun.
Good night. That was good.
Yep. It's been a good show, guys.
Later, man.
Yeah, let's do it again sometime.
Let's not. I think this just goes to show that what we should do on future episodes is all be in the same room. Right? I mean, just the four of us in the same room. I mean, I'm happy to fly to Davenport, Iowa, where Joe is, or y'all can come to Seattle, Texas, where I am. Uncle Daryl, where are you located these days?
In Pueblo.
In Pueblo? I didn't know. Yeah, Pueblo.
Pueblo's in Mexico. Pueblo, Dad lives in Mexico. It's not the actual name of the town. It's actually just what it's called. He lives in a town. It's called Pueblo.
Yeah. It's right by the wall.
Right.
I love that wall. And Dad, where are you located these days?
I can actually tell you where I really live because nobody knows where that's at. I live in Pioneer.
Pioneer.
Did you say you're a pioneer?
Close enough.
Hey, okay. Pioneer, is that where they filmed that Harry Potter porn, The Prisoner of Azkaban?
It is. And I had a bit role in it.
Well, don't sell yourself short.
It's actually 2 bites, but...
That's where they filmed the Sorcerer's Bone.
That's right. That's right. The Sorcerer's Bone. Yeah. Yeah, we live in a world where Trump is president, and it's the funniest thing when we can make fun of Harry Potter via pornography. That's the world we live in.
My favorite Harry Potter movie, Harry Potter movie was Harry Potter and, hey, look what I found to play with.
Yes. That was the 8th
movie. We're getting off to a great start here, guys.
Yeah. We're a little punch drunk. Well, I'm actually literally drunk. I'm on my second beer, so. This is our Thanksgiving episode, right? We have, the four of us, been together for Thanksgiving, but not for a long time, if I recall. The last one was, gosh, I want to say...
Last 20... year?
Were all four of us together last year?
No.
No.
No, I think it's probably been like 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
All of us together? Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably, or wait, maybe more than that. Jesus.
Well, no, we've all been together more recently than our Thanksgiving togetherness. There was my Uncle Daryl's birthday. We all got together. That was fairly recently.
Yes.
But I mean, this is Thanksgiving. So the last Thanksgiving I can remember all of us being together. I think, Joe, you were still in a band. You had that band look about you. You were kind of a band guy.
Yeah, that was in the late 1800s, so yeah. That was a long time ago.
Yeah. So, what Joe and I were thinking, at Dad and Uncle Daryl, was that we would kind of slowly fade into the background as you two just either, you know, tell stories or fight with each other, depending on how much you've had to drink. So, feel free at any moment to tell us some of your favorite Thanksgiving stories.
Well, actually, Daryl and I could tell the same story, but it would sound like two different stories.
I think that's perfect.
Oh, I'm dead. I don't hear anything.
You don't hear me?
Oh, now I hear it. Now I hear me.
Really? When I hit mute, you don't hear anybody? All right. Oh, that's crazy. I can mute everybody at the same time. I was doing it because there was some echo, but yeah, sorry about that. But anyway, go ahead. Tell us the story. Thanksgiving story. What you got?
Thanksgiving story. Daryl, can you think of any thanks?
Well, my favorite, and I don't think it's not Thanksgiving, but me and Dan really cook well.
You do.
And, you know, we're always on the same page. And I've got such an echo that I can't speak.
You know, I got the same thing. I talk, and then I hear myself about a second later. But now I'm not hearing myself.
I think this is the perfect setup to where we can all sound like we're special needs children, and we need to put on helmets and get on the short bus and go home. Because all I can hear is myself speak, too. So if somebody says something funny and I want to somehow retort or respond in a witty way, all I'm going to do is hear myself say what I just said, and that's all I'm doing right now.
You can't hear us,
again,
Joe?
I'm just hearing myself speak.
So, Daryl, were you going to relate the epic tale of the egg and gravy biscuit breakfast?
The biscuit.
The biscuit.
I can't stand. I think it's somebody else talking to me, but it's me.
This is apropos to Thanksgiving, because on Thanksgiving you cook, and
oh my god,
give it your best shot. Hey Jason, if you post this, I'm gonna be under your bed when you get home next with a knife in my teeth. Don't post this on the internet. This is not going to work.
I'm definitely posting. No, we're definitely posting this. We had the intro. I've got the background music. Everything is going swimmingly. This is exactly why I podcast.
I've got a way. I'm going to take this stupid earplug out and tell my story. And I won't be able to hear anything.
So nobody respond.
No one respond until I'm fucking done.
Okay, I won't say anything.
Well, I won't hear you if you do. Okay, so I'm going to tell the biscuit story. And then Dan will tell the biscuit story.
Fair enough.
Perfect.
Okay, here we go. All right, I hope you guys can hear me. So it was a Thanksgiving many years ago, and Dan was helping me do breakfast. It was actually not Thanksgiving dinner, but it was a breakfast. I make this really nice egg gravy with no meat in it. It's pretty much just shit on a shingle. But what's the most important thing is the biscuits that you pour this gravy on. And I was over there making a lot of biscuits. There was a lot of people there. And so Dan asked if he could help out. And I said, well, hell yeah, you know, we got a lot of biscuits to make. So he starts putting the biscuits on the pan. And, you know, he's putting like a tablespoon of biscuit dough there and kind of flatten it out. And I'm busy stirring the gravy. And I look over my shoulder. And he's licking his fingers and then rubbing the top of the biscuits to make them smooth and kind of put a spit glaze on it, And I gave him a look and said, you know, Dan, maybe you shouldn't do that. And, because I have a different technique. And but anyway, I think he took took it wrong the way I looked at him. And we got through it, and we've talked about that ever since, about how he's never going to touch my biscuits again, so to speak. So, but Dan, you know, that I think you could probably tell your version of it and see what really happened that morning.
Yes, can everybody hear me?
Yep.
Am I coming through? Okay. Well, as my brother Daryl said, it was a breakfast, and he was working feverishly to feed quite a few people, and I thought the least I could do would be to pitch in and lend a hand, and so he allowed me to to make the biscuits. He had already made the dough, and his technique was to take a tablespoonful of biscuit dough on the pan, the baking pan, and then allow the biscuit to just naturally rise and form a semi-round structure. I was used to a little bit more form than that. I like my biscuits to be a little more round and a little bit more textured. I should say less textured. And so I took the liberty, and I differ with him on this. You see, I got a small bowl of water, which I would dip my finger into and then massage the biscuit until it was perfectly round and flat. And I was doing each one of these when I don't know if you've had this feeling before where you just felt as though you were being watched and you sort of felt uneasy and nervous. And that's when I looked up and Daryl was looking at me like you would look at a person who had just pulled the legs off a puppy. I've never seen more disgust and loathe in a look in my entire life. Not even the time I actually pulled a leg off a puppy and he saw me. It was worse than that time. And I just looked back at him and I said, well, what? And he said, what are you doing to my biscuits? And I said, I'm merely smoothing them out and making them look more presentable. And he said, don't do that. These biscuits have fed masses for years and years, and they are perfect the way they are. And I broke into tears, and I stood there sobbing, and I couldn't eat, and we just started talking to each other just last week. So that's my,
and that was that's years my, ago.
Yeah, and this happened 15 years ago.
Well,
so it's about the same thing as Daryl said, just with a couple of amplifications.
You know, I got what I hoped to get, which is kind of a brief breakdown of Dad's perspective and then your perspective, Dan. And both perspectives seem like bullshit to me. I'd like to just give.
Well, Dan, I didn't see the bowl of water. I didn't see the bowl of water.
Dad thought it was that he was spitting on the biscuits. Dan thought that he was doing the right thing. Like, okay, I'm just going to form the biscuits, and I'm doing the right thing. The biscuits won't be much different; they'll just be better shaped. And both sides are a little bit off.
Let me knew just... you'd lie about it.
Okay, fair enough. But here's the thing, Dan. I'm gonna start with you. I have to tell you, you're a little bit off when it comes to Dad's perspective of the biscuit. Long ago, when I was a child, he didn't shape the biscuit. He just plopped the biscuit down and let it rise, and it had its own kind of explosive, like, flowering shape to it. Well, he's not down with that anymore, and he hasn't been for years and years. See, what he does is he gets a fork, and he shapes it, like, furiously, like a sculptor shapes the biscuit. Now, he invited you into the process, and there are the blobs of biscuits on there, and you wanted to shape them, but you hadn't waited for my father to shape them the way that he would like to, which is maybe one of the reasons why he was so disappointed in you, is because, one, hey, motherfucker, that's my job, is to shape the biscuits. Two, he thought you were spitting in your hand and just spitting on the biscuits, which is, you know, I hear your side of the story. You weren't spitting on the biscuits at all. You were just putting water on them and trying to shape them with your fingers, by the way, which is, you know, inappropriate, I think, from my father's perspective. But see, you jumped in when it was not your place. So spitting on the biscuits is a bad idea in the first place. But you're wrong, Dad. He wasn't spitting on the biscuits. He was putting water on them, though I think Dad would find that almost equally offensive somehow. But if you would have just waited, you would have seen my dad go to each biscuit with a fork and furiously shape it in a way that only an artist can. And he puts them into a very, very tight disc. But you certainly don't rub your finger on the top. I can understand if you were doing that to the biscuit and then you looked up at Dad, he probably looked at you like you were, you know, pissing in his drink.
Well, I'm glad that you brought up that that point about shaving the biscuits with a fork, because that clears up another misunderstanding that we'd had that day. I did not hear it said as a fork, as an eating utensil. I heard it slightly differently about what I had done. Yeah. I didn't realize that he said he was going to fork the biscuits. I thought he was accusing me of doing something else.
Okay. Well, I'm sure when he screamed out loud, it didn't sound like, hey, well, you forked
when,
the biscuits.
When I said, don't fuck up the biscuits, I meant that the other way.
And also, remember these things, I think all memories, yours, mine, Dad's, Jason wasn't there, but I'm sure he has a memory of it anyway. All of them are incorrect, but I think the funniest one, and I've heard this one before, is that there were no words spoken at all. It was all in the eyes.
That is actually
my uncle
true.
Was rubbing all the biscuit. He looks at my father, and my father looks at him as if he had committed some sort of terrible atrocity. There were no words spoken. It was just all in the eyes. And then I also envisioned my uncle, Lee Daniels, just skulking away slowly and letting Dad do the biscuits as he would have them done. And, you know, how dare Lee Daniels even be a part of it? It's to me, there was no words at all, but that's these stories that we tell, this is why it's so much fun to hear every different part, because there was dialogue in both of your stories, if I remember correctly. But in my memory of the story, there's really no dialogue at all.
Do you know what
it was? Nonverbal dialogue.
It was, but it was very loud.
Very loud nonverbal dialogue.
It was loud. Loud nonverbal dialogue.
Do you know what I like most about this story is how apropos it is, in as much as you guys had this huge emotional orchestration, if you will, occur over some fucking biscuits. Not unlike our 2 hours to get on to Skype together for this shitty podcast. I mean, this shitty podcast is kind of like the biscuits of our relationship, the four of us. Don't you think? I mean, in many ways, this is our biscuit. This is Biscuits 2017, what we're doing here, I feel.
No, oftentimes I feel like I'm making a podcast and I look over at Jason and he's trying to fucking moisten the biscuits.
Yeah.
And he ain't got a bowl of water.
No.
But see, it's got to be verbal because we're on a podcast. So, I can't just look at him. I can't just scowl at him. I have to be like,
I can feel you.
What are you doing?
I can feel you. I can feel you looking at me, Joe. I can feel it. Yeah. There's no need to say anything. I can feel it.
Anyway, he goes both ways, because sometimes he's on a roll and all of a sudden he looks over and I'm fucking moistening the biscuits.
Yeah.
And he's like, are you spitting on the biscuits? Or is that just water? You're just rubbing in a circular motion. You're rubbing this podcast. Fuck you, man.
I think for the listener, it did look like a motion that when you lick your fingers and then rub your nipple, that's what was going on.
I think that's what really bothered you, Dad. The first time you told me the story is like it seemed like a little bit inappropriately sexual somehow.
Yeah,
and you were like, please, if you're going to do something culinary, don't make it sexual. Like, what are you rubbing, Dan? Lee Daniels?
I was rubbing his biscuits. I thought he wanted me to.
Well, I think the worst part of it is, if I remember my version of the story, is that Uncle Daryl said to my dad, are you done with the biscuits? And my dad turned around and said, yes, I am. And Daryl said, why are your hands clean? And why are your pants wet?
And by the way, both of you, Lee Daniels and Dougie Fresh, Leon Daryl, have both been on the podcast before. Now, if you hear Jason say Uncle Daryl, that's just his that's...
It's a pseudonym.
That's his nickname.
Oh, hang on. Wait. Oh, is this... Yeah. I was talking to the wrong uncle. Oh, my God. That's embarrassing. I was talking
no,
to
No, no.
My...
It's the right uncle. Dougie Fresh, Leon, Jack, Daryl.
No, that's a coincidence. I have an Uncle Daryl. He lives in Nova Scotia. He's not actually a literal uncle. He's not actually related to us. He's just somebody who... Well, I mean, when I was in third grade, he was a... Well, it's kind of tough to talk
good
about.
Friend of your mom's.
Kind of, yeah. In a, let's move on. I mean, talk about biscuits. Anyway.
Well, and then I call, you know, look, it's Lee Daniels, but I call him Uncle Dan. It's kind of the same type of thing. But you're saying you the whole time. Look, my father was on the show before, and you were like Uncle Daryl, Uncle Daryl, Uncle Daryl. You thought you were talking to a different guy the whole time. Come on, dude.
I apologize. Okay. It's really important to me that this show maintain its quality and integrity through every episode, and that's why I'm explaining this. I'm not trying to Streisand effect the fact that I fucked up a name and call attention to it by talking about it over and over and over again.
Can you explain to them what the Streisand effect is? It's something that I do a lot, apparently.
The Streisand effect is when you don't want something known to people, and so you make so much... of an effort to make sure they don't know about it, that gives them an indication that it exists in the first place. I didn't explain that very well, but basically it's somebody took a picture of Barbara Streisand's house, and she got all over the media saying, please don't take pictures of my house. And that's when everyone was like, oh, there's a picture of your house? So she, yeah. It's kind of like if I recall in a previous episode, Joe, you and I likened it to the Darth Vader effect, which was if Darth Vader had not tried to get the secret plans from Princess Leia, she never would have sent them to Tatooine, and that means they never would have gotten in the hands of Luke Skywalker, who blew up the Death Star. So if Darth Vader just, sat on his ass, everything would have been fine. And that's what I'm getting at. If I had not said anything about my other Uncle Daryl... no one would know that
everybody
would
have thought that you were talking about the same Uncle Daryl.
Yeah.
So you fucked yourself.
Exactly.
And that's the whole point.
That's all.
Okay. Just point of clarification here. Barbara Streisand was not in Star Wars.
She wasn't C-3PO.
Yes. But if she had the bun hairdo, I think it would have fit her well. I think that would have been good. If she would have sang a full on song with the bun hairdo, I think everybody would have enjoyed it.
Let me ask you guys this question.
I thought she was singing People Who Love People when they blew up the
That's for right.
I missed that.
Yeah. So I'm hearing Joe say that if Barbara Streisand was in Star Wars, you think she should play Princess Leia. I mean, Uncle Leon Daniels, do you have a different take? Who do you think Barbara Streisand should play? Who should she play, if not?
A Wookiee.
Did you say Wookiee?
I said
exactly
Wookiee.
What I was going to say. Exactly what I was going to say. As a matter of fact, I thought I'd actually said it and heard it in my earphones, and I thought, wow.
I was totally confused, too, because Jason asked you, Dan. Jason asked you, but then father answered, but I thought it was you, and I was like,
and he gave my answer.
I can read your mind. Except for biscuits.
There's a disturbance in the force right now. So.
Oh boy, this is the best Thanksgiving ever. So,
talking about Thanksgiving, I don't know if there's any funny stories from Thanksgiving. Yeah, it was all just pleasant.
Things that actually happened on Thanksgiving.
What was that?
Dan, do you know anything that actually happened during Thanksgiving?
Well, I actually just did a 5-minute bit about Thanksgiving 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Let's hear it.
Well, I'll give you the short version. It was the very first Thanksgiving.
Hang on. Before you get started, Dad, let me bring up a laugh track, and I'll play it when you're done.
Okay.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, make sure I got this going on. Let's see.
Great. That's great.
All right.
I love that. Hold on a second before you tell the story so I can bring up a laugh track.
Go ahead.
Is so part and parcel of our entire show.
It is.
Great job, Jason. Here we go.
Okay, so this is a story of Nancy and on I's first Thanksgiving, and our son Jason was only 3 days old, and so I wanted to make sure that I had our first family Thanksgiving. And well, Nancy not really wanting, being able to go out and go to the grocery store after having giving birth 3 days before, sent me to the store to get all the stuff.
There's a
big story behind that, but the bottom line is that I bought a 24-pound turkey and brought it home for the three of us, Nancy and I and our three-day-old child.
It seems excessive.
About 20 pounds.
And the real punch, and the punchline of the story is that we cooked the whole meal and ate and ate and ate until we couldn't eat anymore. And I looked at this turkey still on the platter, and it occurred to me, if we had not cut off its head, a good vet could have saved it. It was nicked in one breast, one leg was partially gone, and I think with a little bit of prosthetics, it'd been right back out in the barnyard if its head hadn't been gone.
Well, if the head was still there, it would have looked right at you and just said, why, Dan?
Is that
probably,
all you got?
Would have looked at it and said, bring it in. Yeah, is that it? Bring it on. Do your worst. But yeah, that's a true story. I bought a 24-pound turkey for two and about 1/8 people.
Hey, can I ask you, how old were you when that happened, Dan? This is going to help me with my timeline when it comes to my entire family. And just tell
22.
Me, how old were you? You were
22.
And Jason, you were 3 years old.
Right. No, 3 days.
3 days.
Oh, 3 days old. I'm sorry. Okay, well, that's a little bit better.
You almost do the math on that.
Well, either way, I was like, well, 19. Anyway, there's a bit of a pattern here. And maybe this is good for the holidays, which is, I think... good time, Jason. Wait till I hit a punchline next time.
First of all, I'd like to say I'm not used to hearing that when I tell jokes.
Go ahead, Joe. Sorry.
Oh, God damn it. This isn't funny. When I'm... Hey, Jason, your penis.
I wish I had the cricket sound
queued
up.
Oh, so he knows what he's doing. Anyway, I thought if I brought up Jason's genitals and then he accidentally hit the laugh track, then I could make fun of him. But no, he's got it together and he's humiliated me. What I'm saying is there's been – I understand that Jason and your parents and my parents too had children very, very early.
I mean, I was born at like 4
thinking,
in the morning.
Oh, Jason's 3 years old. That's stupid. That means Dan was 19 years old. But no, okay, you were 22 years old when you had a kid. That's still very young. I mean, in my mind, that's very young. 22-year-olds are children, as far as
that's
I'm
true.
Concerned.
Right now, I am the age that my dad was when I was the age that he was when I was born.
Excuse me?
Right now, I am the age that my dad was when I was the age that he was when I was born.
Well, let me put this in perspective. Jason sent a message. He said he could not wait until his son was 21 years old so he could have a drink with him. And I said, if you would have had your son when I had mine, you'd be having that drink today.
Yes. Except that if I had had my son when Dad had his,
Dad,
I would have been a miracle of science.
Yeah, even if you had a son when I had a son, he'd be out of college.
Yes. Yeah. If Joe had had Joe Jr. when Uncle, my
Jr.
uncle, had his Uncle Jr., Uncle Joe's Uncle Jr. would be having Uncle Jr. the third. Wait, no, Joe the third. I don't know. God damn it.
Well, see, and this is audio problems, but when Dad said something that sounded important, except he sounded like Corky from Life Goes On, so I didn't know what he said. And but it sounded something like this. If Jason was a
that,
I thought he was doing the Bill Cosby impersonation.
Well, you know.
If this keeps going, I'm going to have to commit suicide.
That's too much.
Yeah, so, no, it's not enough.
So, Joe, I understand that this Thanksgiving, your lovely wife, whose name escapes me, hosted an elaborate meal.
Pauline,
thank you. Pauline hosted an elaborate meal for a very large gathering. How did that go? And if it didn't go well, if it went very well, please lie and say it didn't, because that's more funny.
Well, no, I can explain it to you. We thought we would have a huge turnout. Last year, we had all sorts of her family members show up, and it was we bought a house last year, and we had our first, we hosted our first Thanksgiving, like, just a few months after we bought the house. And it was a little nerve-wracking, but we did a really good job. We brined a turkey. We cooked it just right. It was goddamn delicious. All these people came in, and it's all from her side of the family. There was no one from my side of the family. This year, I thought it would be the exact same thing, but I don't know what this says about how we hosted Thanksgiving last year, but this year it was a very small crowd.
Oh no.
but we did the same thing, and I think we did a great turkey, and we set everything up great, but there just wasn't a good turnout. Maybe we need a better PR person.
Oh,
well, I knew not to show up the first time.
Yeah, he raised you after all. So that means you've got a lot of leftovers then, Joe. Is that what it is?
Oh yeah, and there's nothing I like better than. Here's what it is. If you have a leftover turkey, like cold turkey, dark meat, light meat, doesn't matter.
Right, we don't discriminate.
You just pull that apart, and you put it on white bread with Miracle Whip and salt. Salt first, then Miracle Whip on white bread. That's maybe some of my favorite food ever. It's even better than the entire Thanksgiving meal. That's how much I love that shit. I love that shit.
I do believe that sandwich was the symbol they put on the flag to champion apartheid in South Africa. So that's a white joke. No? Okay. Tough crowd. Joe, are you a I'm going to ask everybody this. Are you guys a are you a eat leftovers just for days and days, or do you get sick of it after a while?
I get sick of it after 2 weeks.
About 2 weeks is your limit. Okay, yeah. Yeah. Dad, are you?
Yeah, so his enthusiasm is clearly limited.
Right.
Yeah.
Stops at 2 weeks.
When it turns green, I'm done.
You're done. Have you ever...
No, when it turns green, he pours more Miracle Whip on it.
There you go.
When it starts to smell like a turd, he puts more salt on it.
More salt. More.
Yeah.
My algorithm for leftovers is I look in the refrigerator and I look at the leftover and I say, how you doing? And if it says not bad, I don't eat it.
That's a good rule of thumb. I could eat leftovers for all the way till the next Thanksgiving. It's the only food. My favorite food is Mexican food. So if there could be a way that you could do a Mexican, mashed potatoes and gravy, I would. You know what I would do? I would lock the doors and not let anybody in, and I would just be by myself in heaven. In fact, I think that is heaven. In fact, if the terrorists were to say to me, "Go blow yourself up," and you will get Mexican mashed potatoes, I'd be like, "Boom, let's do this." Yeah, point me to the crowd.
Well, I think you're just onto something. Why don't you make Mexican mashed potatoes a reality? Is that outside of the realm of possibility?
Here's the truth of the matter.
Mashed potatoes exist. Mexican food exists. Do it, Jason.
Okay,
you're a creative guy.
Here's the truth of the matter. One time, my wife was cooking, and I was also cooking, and we had made mashed potatoes, and she turned around and saw that I was holding a packet of taco seasoning, and the look she gave me reminded me of a look that my uncle gave my dad once over some biscuits. So
stop moistening the mashed potatoes with your finger, sir.
That's what she pretty much said. Yeah. So no, you're right, Joe. I should give it a try, but so far. I'm just too scared. You know how I am. I run away from things that please me. I've been talking to my therapist about it. So anyway, moving on. What do you guys want to talk about?
What's been on my mind, and this is a Thanksgiving thing too, but I'm talking to you, Uncle Dan, Lee Daniels, and my father, Dougie Fresh, Leon Darrell.
Yo!
Isn't there a bit of a frightening story about, because a lot of people, I don't think they do it anymore because too many people died, but there's frying a turkey.
Yeah.
Oh,
used to be a big thing. Yeah. People don't do it anymore again because I feel like there are like third degree burns on children now. So people are like, okay, we're not going to do that anymore. But it used to be a big thing. And I know that, Dad, you did it a couple of times. I was there one time. I never saw any really dangerous type of scenarios so go
you
down.
You weren't there for the fire?
No, but again, I don't know if it was a fire. I just remember one year where you were like, it didn't go well. It didn't. We were lucky to get through it. Why don't you tell us that story?
My brother was there. We got the oil up to a rolling. My God, let me take this sound thing. Okay, so anyway, so we... we got the grease. I guess you use peanut oil. And yeah. So you're doing this peanut oil, and we got it to a rolling boil before we put in the bird. And we didn't have the turkey all the way thawed yet. So there
was
kind
of problem, right?
Some frost on it, some water. And I guess throwing water into boiling oil, it just goes crazy. And so I put it in, and it was such a violent reaction that the oil shot out through the hole in the, you know, where the neck used to be in the turkey, and it kind of went up like a fountain and then flew all over me and then dropped down into the propane fire, and the whole damn thing blew up. And so, you know, I rolled in the grass, you know, I dropped and rolled, and everything calmed back down, and we did cook the bird, but it was pretty exciting. Really
that sounds very exciting.
Well, I just want to say, after all of that, you know, you stopped, dropped, and rolled. There was fire shooting through the sky.
Yes.
or through the air. Sorry, I don't mean to get dramatic about this. Clearly, it's not a... I need to, you know, keep it even-keeled here. It's there was fire, and it was squirting through the air. You had to roll on the grass in order to put yourself out. But was the turkey... moist?
Oh no, we burnt a shell.
well actually, yeah. The turkey was reasonably moist because when my brother was rolling in the grass trying to extinguish himself, I just pissed on the turkey to put it out, and it moistened it up quite a bit.
So you...
And then I rub the black off with my finger.
So you...
Yeah. He pissed on his fingers and rubbed the black off.
That's right.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Yeah. am I wrong, Uncle Dougie Darrell Ding Dong? Did you not put down a cement pad in your backyard specifically for this, or am I thinking of someone else?
It was someone else.
It was someone else. Okay.
Yeah.
He just did it right there.
I think Dad probably put down kindling.
Probably was. Because I was there for one of the Thanksgivings where you did that. You fried the turkey. It was delicious. If I recall, you did two turkeys. One was deep fried. The other was traditional. And the traditional one ended up looking like the kind of turkey that a 22-year-old man with a 3-month baby would serve. Just not a lot gone. Callback. Anyway, but I wasn't there for the...
I get it. Okay.
Yeah. Our listener got it.
Our listener will get it too.
Yeah. What I was trying to do with the kindling was try to smoke it and fry it at the same time.
That's right.
That's right. Actually, now I've got it, Dad. If you've got you've got roiling, and you said roiling. I like that. That's better than boiling. Roiling.
It's broiling with an R.
Right.
Yeah.
So you've got that, and it's peanut oil. And it's not just boiling, it's roiling. And then you throw a turkey in there, which would be okay. But if there's even a little bit of it that is frozen, and by the way, this happened to me too, Dad. I didn't learn from your experience. I didn't expect you to learn. It was very dangerous. But if you throw a even partially frozen turkey in there, then, you know, shit just starts, you know. In your story, Dad, it was flames. But in my story, it was just, you know, globs of boiling water flying through the air. It's all very dangerous. But if you have kindling on the bottom and the turkey itself flies out of the oil, then it you can sear the turkey on the kindling when it lands on the ground, because then everything is on fire. It lands on the fire and it rolls around, and it's a seared fried turkey.
It's a
culinary thing.
It's a tradition in the Edwards family that you drop the frozen turkey in the hot oil, somebody says pull, and then we shoot it out of the air.
That's right. That's right.
Pull!
Boom. If I remember the one time I was there for Thanksgiving, you had all of the people who were younger than you, Uncle, go into the backyard and pick up the dog crap so that the rest of the guests could go out there in the backyard and not be assaulted by these little doggy landmines. Now, I wasn't there the year that you had to stop, drop, and roll, so I'm just assuming that when you came up, you were very effervescent, to put it mildly. Is that true, or was it already clean, the backyard?
Well, you do remember the story I told about the frozen turd, you know, in my ass.
Yes.
I did get one in the year that time.
You did get one in the year. Okay. That's too bad. That's too bad. Well, was my dad there that year for the exploding turkey frozen turd in the air? He was? Okay, so you also had to put up with his moistened biscuits, too. Okay, I'm just trying to find a silver lining in this experience, but it sounds like it was pretty...
No, we're all thankful.
All thankful. That's awesome. I have one...
I am thankful, too, but you know what? You know what? I've got to bring this up because it just... God damn, I can't let it go. To me, the story that was told three times, once by my father, once by your father, Jason, and then I had to tell my own version because, oh my God, there were things left out, I thought. The one thing that was left out, and I didn't bring it up, is the title of the story, which is The Moistening of the Biscuits. and neither of them brought it up, but... I learned that from them. They were like, let me tell you about the story of the moistening of the biscuits.
Yes. Yeah.
I just think it's a great title. So, you know, but from now on, when we tell the story, and Jason, then you can make up your own version of the story, because that's how we tell stories. Who cares? I wasn't there. I don't think I was there. Was I, guys? I don't think so. I just heard the story. But now you've heard the story, Jason, and you can say... To your grandchildren, you can say, let me tell you about the story of the moistening of the biscuits.
I will tell them that story. I'll also tell them this story, my worst Thanksgiving ever. And I guess if we're doing titles, I will call it The Fried Chickening of the Thanksgiving. It's not very much of a story, but I was deployed. And when I say deployed, I mean my boss sent me to Germany for a month to work on some stuff. This was back in the day before I was a car wash washer. Back then, I was a car washer washer. That is to say, I had to sponge bathe people who had been put into a coma in terrible car washing accidents. That's not really part of the story. Here's what I'm getting at. I was there during the month of November, and they don't celebrate Thanksgiving in Germany, so I was left to my own devices, and being a not wealthy man, what I decided to do was, best I could hope for was KFC, so I went and I got some KFC for Thanksgiving, and not only was it KFC, gentlemen, it was German KFC, so there I am, sitting in a darkened office, half drunk on cheap beer, which in Germany is easy to do because their cheap beer is way better than even our expensive beer, staring at a plate full of gnawed on chicken bones, and all I could think was, God damn it, I wish the Germans had won the war.
Wow.
Wow, that's sick.
Yes, that's sick. Thank you for the
courtesy.
You know
what? I don't know if you're capable of this, Jason. Yeah. If anybody is, it's you. Can you scream Kentucky Fried Chicken in German and with every syllable fire a gun into the ceiling?
I can.
With every syllable.
I can, except my son is asleep about 25 feet away from me. So I'll do it next Thanksgiving episode.
We keep running into that fucking problem. Come on. We've got comedy ready to go.
Are you calling my son a fucking problem?
Son just is that what you just said to me?
Is that what you just said to me, Joe? You just said my son is a fucking problem. Is that what you just said to me? Is that what you just said to me?
I thought you were going to shoot your son. Oh, my God.
You know what, Joe?
I'm just saying.
Because I agree with you 100%. I agree with you 100%. Look, it's an Edwards tradition. I'm a problem for my dad. You're a problem for your dad. My son's a problem for me, which means I know he's going to probably have a terrible moistening incident in his Thanksgiving future as well. So it's all good.
Moistening incident?
Yeah.
Well, you made me feel bad about myself.
No,
Jason.
I'm teasing
you're pretty
you.
Good
I said,
at that.
Joe, I said I agreed with you. I asked you if you really said that so I could say that I agree with you. Did you not hear me?
Okay.
Could you not hear me?
No,
over?
I didn't. You know what all I can hear, by the way, is my own voice bouncing back at me and then, like, my dad maybe laughing and then he sounds like a Yeti. And then, and then I hear my uncle, but... It sounds like he's moaning and like dying and stuff. I don't know what you guys are doing. The audio on this show is terrible. I'm doing my best. I'm just saying, speak German, fire a gun into a ceiling, and it'll be funny.
Okay, for what it's worth, and then I'll be quiet. I looked up on Google Translate how to say Kentucky Fried Chicken in German. I looked it up. This is how you say it. It's Kentucky Fried Chicken. Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Cookie fry.
Kentucky
hey,
fried
Dad,
chicken.
Try that one. Wait, Jason, tell Dad how to say that correctly in German.
Kentucky Fried Chicken. Yeah.
Yeah? All right, Dad, give it a shot.
Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Not bad.
Not too bad.
Not bad at all.
It's
all
in our DNA, apparently. We are some talented motherfuckers, I'll tell you what. I think it's the only thing keeping the show together. Certainly not the audio, that's for sure. So,
well, I don't know what minute we're at, but
47.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not bad. What I'm saying is so we've had a Dan episode that is Lee Daniels. Mm-hmm. We've had an Uncle Daryl episode that is Dougie Fresh, Leon Daryl. And they both told stories. Some of them have overlapped. Really, let's think about what are some stories where we can hear one from Dad and one from Dan, Lee Daniels. I'd like to hear
in the spirit of family.
Like we haven't even delved into how many stories these guys have to tell.
Thousands.
And I'd like if we have a few more minutes, like let's have the contrast, like the real contrast between one person's story and the next, because the most fascinating thing to me is that the truth of all of our stories and our family is not accessible. Like it's all bullshit. So we don't know what really happened. We never will. And Jason, you and I are the same way. Our stories somehow just trail off into bullshit.
Right. Well, I don't know about you, Joe.
When I tell
a story, I get so bored. So here's something I was hoping. Help me remember if I asked one of them to tell the story already. But in the spirit of Thanksgiving and family, I want to hear again the story of the little chick that you guys got for your sister. Did they tell that story already?
Oh my god! Yeah. Well, yeah. Dan Lee Daniels, Uncle Dan, told the story.
Oh, you did.
I thought it was well done, but I would like to hear my father's version of the story. Maybe it's the same story, but I feel like it's exaggerated or embellished in different ways. What is your memory of that, Dad?
Well, I want to clear one thing up. Jason, you mentioned that it was my sister's chicken. It wasn't her fucking chicken. It was mine. And, you know, it was the only thing I ever owned that was alive at the time. And so anyway, I got it for Easter and it was blue and, you know, letting the chicken.
Why was it blue, Dad?
And, you know, Darlene, she could, she was just starting to walk, you know, and she kind of liked the chicken too. So she was racing it around the house. And as the chicken turned around and went underneath her legs, well, she got confused and sat down on the chicken. So, you know, and the chicken survived a little bit, you know, it was kind of circling more than it used to. And that kind of made my sister even more excited because this chicken was just running in circles at this point. And anyway, well, she got dizzy and she fell on it a second time and put it out of its misery while I watched in horror as the only my first pet was killed right before my eyes. So that's my version of it. I think Dan, he remembers some more details, if I remember right. It's,
yeah, Dan had a lot more details, but your story was just... It's you. It's your fucking chicken.
Yeah.
You had a blue chicken. By the way, can you... Dan kind of went into why it was blue. Why was it blue, Dad?
I can help with that if you would like to hear why that chicken was blue. It often is the result of choking something and it turns blue. And choking a chicken was sometimes all the fun we had.
I didn't know what I meant.
Listen, when I choke my chicken, it's not necessarily blue. Sometimes it's purple.
Yeah. But...
Well, that's extreme choking.
Yeah, didn't your dad teach you anything, Joe? You got to choke that chicken.
Oh, God.
That's choking that'll put fur on your hands.
That's right. I mean, you want to learn how to moisten biscuits, Joey. You really got to learn how to choke a chicken.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the sex and relationships episode of JBC.
I can explain why the chicken's blue.
Yeah.
So the chicken's blue is because we got him at a grocery store and they used them as a promotion to get you in the store. And they would take these chickens and just dye them blue and maybe orange and red or whatever color they could think of. And they'd give them away when you went to the grocery store, believe it or not.
Was this an Easter thing?
You know what? What I do is I try to look at Dan's story, my dad's story, and see, you know, where does the truth lie? Because you never know. When it comes to what actually happened that day, I'm sure that Darlene, is that your sister's name in this universe?
Yeah, the chicken killer? Yeah.
Yeah, the chicken killer? Okay, Darlene. We're going for it.
The chicken slayer, as we call her.
The chicken slayer.
Chicken slayer.
Clearly, she as a toddler sat on a chicken.
Yeah, but somehow
a chicken died. And clearly, a chicken was a different color. We don't know what color it was. According to Dan, it was a different color, I think. Am I right, Jason?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. See, all the details start to shift.
He said pink. My uncle said blue. Okay. Yeah. Because when my dad chokes chickens, they turn pink. I don't know.
I actually choke chickens when they are pink.
That's right.
See, I think my story, my version of the story would be most accurate because when I choke a chicken, it turns purple.
Okay, so there you go. There you go. So we've got three chicken chokers on the show tonight, everyone. And they're men of different colors. That's the spice of life is variety or something. I don't know, a thing. We're at minute 53 now, so we got 7 minutes to think of something actually funny to say. Do we have any more Thanksgiving stories? Or, Joe, did you know of any story that you wanted my dad and your dad to tell that you remember? Or maybe they could volunteer one? Something?
Well, there's a whole lot of stories, but Thanksgiving-specific stories, I think, are a little bit rare.
Or holiday.
I'm really glad about the moistening.
I know. Here's a story I want to hear both of them tell. The time that they assaulted that woman on the tennis court with a tennis ball and poker sunglasses.
Oh, yes.
That was classic.
You know what? This is a good one for them to tell together.
Okay.
Who wants to begin and then jump in? You guys just tell the story together. Jump in sentence by sentence. This is a great story.
Well, we're in Woodland Park, and we went to the local park to play tennis. And we didn't read the sign that said it was Women's Day there at the tennis court, but we went ahead and did that anyway. So by coincidence, there was a couple of women playing tennis right beside us. And so there was a pond that was right next to the tennis courts. And of course, I served one up. It went over the fence and went into the pond. So, you know, me and Dan went over there and got it, and it was all soaking wet and shit. And we thought we'd use it anyway because it was really fun because water spun off of it when you hit it. So yeah. Dan served up the wet tennis ball, and it was a little bit out of my reach, so I had to jump for it. And I took a mighty swing at it, and it went over and hit one of the lady tennis players right between the eyes, broke her glasses in two. They flew in both sides of her head, and she dropped like a wet rag. And so I'm going to let Dan finish the story because they shot an errant shot, and it kind of came over into our court. Didn't hit anybody anyway. And Dan, do you remember what you said?
No, I don't.
I will tell you what you said.
Oh, she, please.
So you went over there to get the ball for them, and you pick up the ball and you go, I think this is yours. There's no blood on it.
Oh God, I do remember that now.
That's what you said.
Yeah. It can't be ours.
This has got to be yours. There's no blood on it.
I do. I remember that day vividly, and the story you told is, I think, extremely accurate. The only thing I would add is I don't remember it was returning a volley as much as it was. We decided that the best way to dry out the ball was just to hit it several times as hard as we could, and one of those volleys. Apparently, the change in mass due to the relative water weight of the tennis ball caused it. It was a moisture problem again.
It was a demoisturing of the ball.
But your assessment of it hitting her right between the eyes and splitting her glasses right down the bridge, that's etched in my mind forever. And she dropped like a stone. I mean. It was just like she went horizontal at the point of impact and then fell to the ground. It's like she was levitated parallel to the ground and then just driven in by some external force.
It was bad.
She didn't even twitch. She just laid there, eyes wide open, staring into the sun, and her partner ran around the net. And stared down at her in utter horror. And we, being the gentlemen we were, I ran to the car and started it. But your brother my brother actually was the one that went over and apologized. And,
I did.
And I felt bad about that. So I drove around and said,
you drove away without Dad?
Yeah, I did. I said, well, no sense both of us dying. I mean, Christ.
She's dead. Somebody's going to jail.
Somebody's got to tell
the story.
I'm not
going to jail for this.
But, no, actually, I exaggerate. We both went over and apologized, and they were not as pleased with our apology as we'd hoped.
But Dan,
go ahead.
But Dan, you know everything settled down, and then you pick up the ball and you mention blood.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the thing.
It was sort of an icebreaker, I thought.
Yeah, you'd already done the glasses breaker, so now it's time to break the ice.
Right.
And, you know, it's not like we didn't care because I told her, I said, you know, I noticed that your sunglasses are broken, but if you just hold your hand right above your eyebrows, not only will it shield the sun from your eyes, it'll cover up that nasty gash.
Well, here's the thing. After 100 years, once Jason tells his child this story, and Jason's child tells, you know, generation after generation, what it's going to be is this: the tennis ball comes flying at this woman's face, and it breaks her glasses in two, but she grabs both sides of the glasses as they shatter in two and goes into this crane kick like from the Karate Kid. And as it bounces off her face, she kicks the ball back at you and knocks Dad dead out. Like, he gets knocked out. Straight up, just... Now, that's an amazing story.
That's a Chuck Norris movie.
I'm just saying, when you take these stories 100 years out, and some of your guys' stories, they're only like, what, 20, 30 stories out, or years out? The story is only a few years out. I just can't wait to hear some of these stories once they've been brought down 100 years. And so well, I'm trying to...
I think the best one, my brother has exaggerated over the years.
The skiing is, story, yes.
My skiing story.
Mm-hmm. You know, I always
Jason, do we have enough time?
The most accurate.
Do we have enough time for the skiing story?
Yeah, we've got time. Well, we just hit 1 hour, but hell with it. We have time for that, and then there's one other story I want to hear. So yes, please go.
Oh Jesus! All right, who wants to do it?
Well, I have to tell the real story first, and then Dan's version of it. I think would.
This
be
is perfect well, I, because Dad I will tell I, you what actually happened, and then
but I
Dan.
Think I should tell my version, and then he should tell what actually happened.
Oh, you're right. Lee yeah. Daniels, let's hear your shit.
Okay, this is the my truthful version of the.
This is my truthful version. My brother
Hello?
Was in the Air Force at the time, and he was stationed in Ogden, Utah. Oh, got to get up closer. Okay, he was stationed in Ogden, Utah, and he was there at the Air Force Base, and some of his friends said, hey, Daryl, have you ever skied before? And my brother said, no, I never have. And they said, well, why don't you come with us? We'll teach you everything you need to know. And he said, oh, sounds good. So they went to the local ski slope there near Ogden, don't know the name of the mountain. And what they did was they all got on the ski lift, went right to the top of a blue slope. They all jumped off and left him and said, see you at the bottom. And there he is, never been on skis before in his entire life. We grew up in Kansas, which is so flat. If you dropped a bowling ball in Nebraska, you'd have to kick it all the way to Oklahoma. It would not even roll. And so here he is on a blue slope, and he's just staring at what seemed to be this precipice that he had to go over. But he's an intelligent man. He's a deep thinker. So he watches the other skiers, and he notices that what they do is they do not go down straight down the mountain. They go across the mountain and then turn and come back the other way. And he says, this makes perfect sense because that way, you know, you can control your speed. So he slips over the edge and he cuts to the left and he has to turn because he's coming to a tree line and he falls over, which is certainly understandable. So he gets back up and he cuts to the right, again, another tree line, and he tries to turn and he falls over. Now, this doesn't sound like much of a story, but try to consider that he's like at about 7,000 feet. Born and raised Kansas, which is, what, 3 feet below sea level. I'm not sure what it is, but anyway, it's not that high. And he's starting to get exhausted. Well, after about 4 or 5 falling, he is so tired, so worn out, so exhausted, he's afraid that he just can't move. And he decides the only way out of this is just to point the skis straight at the lodge and go for it. And so he does. And at first, it looked like the right decision until he started to pick up a little bit of speed. And then he picked up a little bit more speed. And he got to the point where he realized that he was sort of at the point of no return. There was now no way out of this. But it's okay because when he gets to the lodge, it's going to flatten out and he'll be okay. That's when he realized that he did not see a very large rock with a wooden fence around it that was cutting right across his path. And he's approaching it at a rapid pace, and he just has to make a split decision. He turned. Well, we have already discussed what happens when he tried to turn, but this time he turned going at such an incredible rate of speed, he just started to tumble, and his clothes started to fly from his body, skis, poles, gloves, boots, pants, underpants, T-shirt,
it's just, he was just going and going and going. And finally he comes to a stop, and he's laying there, and he's just lying there, and he just doesn't know where he is or what's happening. And he thinks, maybe I'm dead. Maybe I'm going to be dead. I don't know. And then he hears a voice, and the voice said, "Do you think he's alive?" And then he heard another voice, and it said, "No fucking way." And then he heard a third voice, and it said, "I think I saw him move." And then he noticed that people were digging into the snow, and they were pulling him out of the snow, and they were bringing parts of his clothes, and they were putting his socks back on and his underpants back on and his goggles and his hat. And finally, they just got him all back together, and he was alive.
Humpty Dumpty.
Yeah, he was alive, and he picked up his skis, and he walked the rest of the way to the ski lodge, and that's my version.
That's pretty close. I don't know if I change a whole lot. I was in the Air Force.
I wouldn't call it completely unreasonable, but I would call it fucking preposterous.
No, it's not preposterous at all. Now, so here's my story. Here's my side of it. And you have to realize that I was actually there. So we'll see how this goes. They take me out there. It's the first time I've ever been skiing. And they put the skis on me, and they give me a couple of little lessons there. And they point down there to where the ski lift started. And they said, "Well, we're going to go over there and do our Black Diamond stuff. And you go over there. That'll take you up to where you need to go." And they went away. And so there I was. But I had to ski down to the chairlift. I had to ski to it. Well, I pointed my skis to the chairlift and went right by it over a fucking cliff and fell into a frickin' snowbank. And I had to be dug out of that snowbank. So that really happened. I just didn't know how to stop, and I just went over this cliff, and they had to get me out. So they get me in line to the lift, and I get on okay, and I go up, and Dan, you're right, it was probably a little bit above my skill level, and this is where the story kind of meshes. I get off, and I'm trying to go back and forth, and I'm just getting beat up. You know, I'm falling down, and I do make that dreadful decision to just ski down the hill and get this over with. You know, this turn is for the, it's not happening for me. So I just point my skis down the hill and off I go. And after about 3 or 4 seconds, I noticed my skis were chattering, and I thought that was a bad sign from how fast I was going. And my hat did fly off, and my glasses flew off, but I hadn't even fallen down yet. It was just from the extreme speed that I was going. Well, I noticed that I was going towards this dangerous area, and I had to make a very slight adjustment to get back on track. You know, so I noticed all the good skiers, they plant their pole, and then they just jump up a little bit, and then they're going a different direction. So that's
no
what
problem.
I did.
Easy.
Of course, I was going 120 miles an hour. And so I stuck my pole in the snow, and everything came to a halt very quickly, very quickly. Matter of fact, it was so quick, when I fell, my head and face hit the snow, and I didn't have time to shut my eyes. So snow had jammed up underneath my eyelids, and it was very painful, very, very painful. So that hurt, and it did kind of knock me out for a little bit. I didn't know, you know, how badly I was hurt, and I did hear voices, but it was somebody skiing up to me, and it was two young kids. And as I looked at them, you know, through my bloodshot eyes and my snow-cut eyes, I noticed that they each had one ski on, and they skied up there just on one ski each, you know, and they weren't snowboarding either. And one of the kids said, "You know, are you okay? You know, we need to call somebody." And I said, "No." And I said, just curiosity, I said, why do you have one ski on?" And he says, "Oh, we can only afford one set, so we share them, you know. He wears one, I wear the other one," and they skied off perfectly, you know, away from me. And that's my version of the story. And obviously humiliated, and that was it.
Oh boy.
I like his. Jason, I forgot about the thoughts? Snow under the ice.
Because I do. I know that we're well over, but
do I have any thoughts?
Do you have any thoughts?
I'm just, I'm thinking I've got, I share DNA with these people, and just today my wife was telling my, my wife was telling my dad how much I hate snow, and I think now he's starting to understand why that might be. Do you, Joe, your thoughts? Do you have any thoughts,
well,
Joe?
Well, see, again, both of these stories were great, but once, I think when my uncle Lee Daniels was a little drunk, I heard a story where my father's skin was stripped from his skull. Seriously, like, well, he was going 120 miles per hour, and then he was going 500 miles per hour, and then he had broken the sound barrier. And then not only had all of his clothes been torn off, but the flesh from his skeleton had been fucking stripped off. And then he went like a flaming comet into a snowbank, melting the entire snowbank and creating a crater. And they pulled him from the crater as a skeleton. And he heard, and that's when I hear, oh, there's two voices. Okay. Is he still alive?
Hey Dan, you remember when your coat got hung up on the chair and it flipped you around into a concrete wall?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too.
See, Joe, and is it any wonder?
Just saying it now. Now I realize that the stories don't just keep getting more and more, intense and improbable. They actually like wax and wane, like into pure fantasy, and then they come back a little bit into reality. We put our fathers on this podcast, and the stories actually have been, I think, a little bit reserved and based in reality a little bit. But I've heard stories from these gentlemen where it's fucking completely out of control. And that's all I'm saying. I want to be the representative of the stories where, look, it's the skin comes peeling off of the face, and it's just the grinning skull in at 600 miles per hour.
Some podcast I will tell you the version of the dropped bomb story where the sky opened up and a hand came down and actually grabbed the bomb before it struck detonator first into the hard ground and sat the bomb on the level area, and a voice said, "Watch it." Someday I will tell you that story.
Yeah.
Well, Jason, you wanted another story, but you know what? We're gonna have our dads.
We're gonna have
on the
again.
Podcast again, yeah. So we can. If you want to end the show, I get it. But did you have a specific? Did you have something that you wanted to hear before?
Yeah, but
this
it'll take longer before. Longer than the rest of the Royksopp song, so we'll save it for next time, I think. okay. Yeah, it's pretty late for those of you who aren't on the same coast as Dad and I, so which is the North Coast. I'm not going to explain that. So, any last thoughts as the Royksopp gets increased in volume?
Well, I want to hear on your podcast sometime in the future about Joey's walk through the attic episode.
Yes, absolutely. That
already exists, actually, but the story is not over.
Okay.
More to it. Good. All right, well, gentlemen, thank you so much for wading through all of our technical difficulties. Once again, probably our best episode, the audio notwithstanding, so happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, to you as
well. Take care, guys.
Happy Dadsgiving!